You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, June 10th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, hospitalizations spike in early out states as we pass 14 days from the Memorial Day threshold. Meanwhile, lawmakers, courts begin to implement reform as cops continue to help illustrate Black Lives Matter's point. Republicans ring the alarm bell for November, and they're still holding out for the day Donald J. Trump finally becomes president. Democrats seek a probe of violence at Lafayette Square. I say, look in the mirror and call one. Primaries in multiple states last night. Georgia shows why it was subject to the Voting Rights Act preclearance provision. New York lawmakers repeal the law that protects cops' disciplinary records. The House Judiciary Committee holds hearings on police violence today. And the third highest COVID deaths in the world, Brazil, restores its coronavirus data by court order. Lastly, new report, Chauvin and Floyd had run-ins at the club they had worked at together. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Excuse me. My voice is really bad. I had no idea what I guess I hadn't even been talking that much. I got woken up very, very early this morning by my son, and I told him he could not watch an episode of television. And so therefore, he decided to punish me by not allowing me to sleep in at all. Yeah. So
you can't have an episode of sleep.
What's that?
You're not allowed an episode of sleep.
That's correct. If he can't watch, I've turned him on to Phineas and Ferb now. And so now he's like, when I don't let him watch TV, he's like, well, it's your fault because you knew I'd like Phineas and Ferb. And now you're not letting me watch it, which is a decent argument, I guess. Thanks for joining us. Michael is here. It is not Jeremiah Johnson, but in fact, it's Michael Brooks. Do you even know that reference?
No, but I'm assuming it's some type of like, you know, union general or something. I don't know.
No.
Western it was guy, right?
It was a, I think it's a fictional character, but played by Robert Redford.
Dude with a big beard. Yeah. Oh, is that where that?
He goes up into the mountains.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, sure. If the mountains is quarantine.
Well, I mean,
Brooklyn.
He doesn't see any people. So there you go.
Oh, that sounds great. So by the way, I just want to say, I agree with your son.
About the Phineas and Ferb thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Thanks for joining us, folks. Glad you can make it. we've got a decent amount of news today. We'll take some calls early as well. Hopefully my voice will hold up. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to go a short show today.
How long has your voice been bothering you?
This is new.
This is new. You're discovering this just now.
Yep.
During the intro.
Yeah.
In the intro. Oy.
I thought it was fine before, but now I don't know what's going on. The Republicans are freaking out right now, and we'll get to the primaries. There was not great news for progressives in the primaries. There was some decent news, but not great news. But, you know, it wasn't necessarily the most of progressive states, as it were. But we will get to that. Meanwhile, Republicans seem to be really starting to freak out a little bit in terms of November. And you can see it in multiple ways. Not the least of which is that the Republicans feel like they have to address. Now, and I want to make this very clear. Nothing we're going to get from the Democratically controlled Congress, a House, or the Republican controlled Senate is going to be sufficient, I think, for what needs to happen, even at a federal level, right? Because most of this has to happen at a local level. But there is movement, which is surprising, not just obviously coming from the Democrats in the House, but Republicans in the Senate, which I think is indication of just they understand what public sentiment is. And Donald Trump is freaking out about this because he was really counting on a big black vote for him in November. And I'm not really actually being facetious.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is, yeah, counting on chipping off a couple of points of the black vote. I mean, clearly, that was in all their ads. That's the plan.
That seems to be out the window a little bit, and I think it's freaked him out.
I would say so. I think the ads were sort of undermined by the gassing of the protesters.
Yeah, I think that may have. And just things like, you know, George Floyd is looking down upon us, and he's very excited about these unemployment numbers. I suspect that was probably not met in I don't know in what possible community. Maybe Larry Kudlow was like the only person who was like,
yeah, George Floyd, Kirby Mark, excited.
And just the next thing we're going to see is presumably, the Republicans believe that this defund the police is going to be, or is a little bit of a toehold for them. That the idea is that they can sort of convince people that the police are the victims here in some way, and that the idea of defunding just goes too far. This is what they're going to attempt to do. I just don't think it's going to work. I think we've hit a critical mass on some level where the right wing narratives are just not going to gain traction in the way that they have in the past. And I think there's, you know, several unique reasons for it. In addition to obviously, you know, what we've seen in the past couple of weeks, you know, you start having people protesting police violence and they are met with police violence. There's not a lot of arguments that you need to make at that point. Here is Sean Hannity. And they are, you can just watch Fox News to find out how sort of like lost they are in terms of what the narrative should be here. And here is Sean Hannity. He wants to make it absolutely clear. He's not making any comparisons between the way George Floyd was treated and the way Donald Trump was treated. But he wants you to see that there is a comparison.
He exposed how corrupt, high-ranking law enforcement officials tried to rig an election and destroy Donald Trump at all costs, to overturn an election. Even the president himself, it's not the same thing as what happened to George Floyd, but it's horrific. He was a victim of crooked cops. Now, again, not the same circumstances. I'm not making any comparison. A bad cop is a bad cop. And by all means, by the way, the damage was real to the country. The damage in Minneapolis is real to the country. And that the case, what was done in George Floyd case, should never happen.
Yeah. Don't make a comparison. Just bring me up in the same context. Thanks, Sean.
I got to think that as far as like if you were to go to school and get a PhD in not making comparisons, or I should say in making comparisons, that would be the way that you would do it. I mean, just saying, I'm not making a comparison, but on one hand you have this and on the other hand you have that. I'm not making a comparison, but look at these two things.
I'm not making he even goes down, I'm not making comparison, but look at them. I'm not making comparison, but they're both bad for the country. I'm not making a comparison, but bad things are bad things. I mean, he made actually almost three discrete comparisons.
In fact, at one point, he gets confused about what he's talking about was yes. bad for the country.
Yes.
He was trying to intertwine them so much.
Yes.
Listen, the way that George Trump has been treated is not a comparison to the way that Donald Floyd was treated.
Derek, Robert Mueller was my yeah. Derek Chauvin.
I'm not making a comparison, but Nelson Mandela is how I say it.
Comey and I also butted heads.
Yes.
Chauvin, Comey, dirty cop's a dirty cop.
The level of desperation that they're into right now, as they see so much of their project being threatened. I don't think that we are really at the point where their project is as threatened as they I think are indicating, but it's nice to see at least a little bit.
George Floyd and I were stablemates.
We will get into some of the the reforms that we're seeing both from lawmakers and from the courts. There was an interesting decision handed down yesterday in terms of a civil case against some police. We will get to that in a moment. Just want to let you know that today the show is in part sponsored by an app called Blinkist. I've told you about Blinkist before. We've got mixed up routines right now. Sometimes we have kids in the house constantly screaming. I don't know if you could hear that in the background, but freaking out. Still, you maybe want a little opportunity to learn something, to check out, to stay up informed on the latest stuff that's being written. Well, Blinkist is unique and powerful. It works on your phone, works on your tablet, works on your web browser. It takes the key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories. It condenses them down into what they call blinks, which you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes. And now Blinkist is also offering exclusive original podcasts from top authors and creative thinkers. You can also dive deeper into full-length nonfiction audiobooks at a special discounted price. Over 14 million people use Blinkist to deepen their knowledge of topics spanning from self-improvement, management, business, happiness, politics, history. For me, this is great. I've told you many times before what I like about Blinkist, and it's basically there are books that I don't have time to read that I wouldn't be interested in reading. This is what the thing for me about Blinkist is that it drops the threshold of how interested I have to be in a book to actually check it out. That's basically it. I'm not making any point here with this, but with that said, I read the blink, if you will, of Blowout by Rachel Maddow. I mean, it's just not one that, and it, I found it interesting. The book, insofar as like a lot of information about, basically about oil and about the, petro economies. And, I'm not quite as, enamored with some of the solutions, but this is exactly why Blinkist is perfect for something like this. It's not a book I necessarily would have picked up and read, but now I've read it. Or at least I've got the key takeaways. I'm looking at this too. I want to do Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. Has anybody read that?
Ooh, no. I feel it like sounds I great.
But right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. You go to Blinkist.com/majority report. You get a 7-day free trial. And then you get 25% off a premium membership and up to 65% off of audiobooks. Yours to keep forever. Matt. That's 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. And it's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/majority report. You get 25% off a premium membership and a 7-day free trial to check it all out. Blinkist.com/majority report. All right, let's get into this. Let's start with, just a little bit of movement that we're seeing in terms of reform. In New York State, they are passing a broader package. These are not huge reforms, But they are, in fact, reforms. Where is it here? Number two. And this one is a good one. In New York State, I'm having trouble finding it. They have passed a law that basically, or I should say they repealed a law that was protecting the disciplinary records of cops. And so you would have no sense. Here it is. Both houses of the New York State Legislature have passed a bill that repeals Civil Rights Law Section 50A. This has been on the books for 45 years almost. And it shielded police disciplinary records from public view. Of course, this is highly problematic. The guy who, the public was not aware that Pantaleo, the guy who choked Eric Garner to death in 2014, had an abysmal record of misconduct. No idea. And he was kept on the force for, what was it like, almost like 2 or 3 years. He was suspended or something, but this is just another, it's a small little piece that helps put pressure on the entire system to hold to account cops who are violent or you know, inappropriate or whatever it is. Apparently, this is part of a larger package. Not sure exactly of the other things, but I don't think they're quite huge, to be honest with you. Meanwhile, we talked about what the Democratic offering was in the House the other day. Republicans are pushing two separate bills, apparently. I don't know what's going to be in them. I don't think they're going to be terribly impressive, but the idea that they have to respond, I think, is important. And of course, Tim Scott is going to be the guy who he is the only
the most
black
embarrassing essentialism that they just tapped Tim Scott. It's
just, oh, yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
He was appointed by Mitch McConnell to lead the effort. Do we have a picture? Brendan, did you pull that picture of the interns? I know this is sort of like.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, I know this isn't like a big deal, but it really. It's a nice shorthand to explain the dynamic that's going on here. And frankly, I think it could be in many respects. While we have, you know, sort of ongoing issues about class, about money, this, I think, era in many respects is will be defined in many respects, I think, by race. Donald Trump got into office, largely, at least from a Republican perspective, by being the champion of the birther movement. It was, in many respects, a response to having an African-American president, which racialized everything for a lot of people, in some ways good ways, in some ways bad ways. Put this up there. This is the Barack Obama, I guess, interns, right, that they have. Now, there's a real problem with interns, just broadly speaking, and I don't know if they get paid at all. But, you know.
I was going to say, trust that class is at the center of these intern classes.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. But with that said, there's no reason to believe the people in this picture have any more or less money than the people in the next picture. But there is a big difference. Just zoom in just a little bit more so that we can really get a sense of this. Okay. Yeah. All right. There you go. Okay. All right. Now let's see the latest iteration of our existing president. There it is. You notice a little difference? There is literally one black person, and I think a woman who
Indian woman,
she's Indian,
South Asian
woman.
Yeah, South Asian, and you know, at the very least, a lot of people who can present as white. In fact, everyone else who can present as white. Now, I have no reason to believe that anybody, you know, that the when we talk about, you know, what class they come from, that they are, I would imagine, all children or, yeah, of wealthy people. Maybe there's a couple who are not, who knows. But broadly speaking, that's why I say that many respects, this era is defined by class, because there is a certain constant within American society that may be even that certainly is a massive problem we have. But when we talk about the differences of this eras, I think in many respects that really captures some of it.
That's there's a really great talk I just watched called, I think it's called Policing Beyond the Technical Fix by Cedric Johnson. And he's very good at delineating, like, essentially getting the one part of what needs to be done, and I guess there's a little bit of movement in the House bill, is very basic civil rights stuff, to the point that it's appalling and terrifying. Like, you need a federal ban on chokeholds? Like, what?
Right.
What? How is that acceptable? Like, you know, and we've been and you can go and read Bill Bradley, 1990, saying that we need federal bans on racial profiling, talking about New Jersey State Police. And then when you get into the more ambitious demands, like getting rid of broken windows, or what people have, you know, or what they've renamed broken windows, or different versions of defunding and redirecting funds, then it does open up the whole class and economics game. So that's the, you know, that's the big concern right now. It's obviously an improvement that the Republicans feel a need to pretend on the civil rights dimension.
Right.
But the, you know, the broader ambition is still not in play yet.
Well, I think in terms of like those, I think the only mechanism that the federal government has to do something like cut their funding is to either cut, there's some programs they can cut, like the 1033 and stop giving them military hardware.
Yeah, that seems pretty basic.
But I think they could also, maybe the courts might have a problem with this, they could tie federal funds into structural reforms with the police. Like, right. You could maybe say, police cannot be the first responders for people who are, might have mental issues.
Absolutely.
There may be mechanisms in which to do that without, you know, running afoul of a Supreme Court that had a problem with, you know, expansion of Medicaid. But
that's most true. Part,
a lot of this stuff has to happen locally. Although this is interesting.
I just real quick. I think not only, I mean, yeah, it's the Supreme Court is one thing, but I mean, as far as the types of interventions that could potentially be done federally, there's things like you just mentioned, and also this incredible disturbing paradox that the systemic abuse and racism and class structure that defines policing, it's all about over policing and terrorizing certain neighborhoods and communities. And then on the other hand, actually, when it comes to like actual crime, under detectivizing them, in the sense right. that not investigating murders, not investigating serious crimes. And that's why you'll see in the polling those, you know, very interesting contradictory numbers of, on one hand, absolutely the police are biased, absolutely they lie, absolutely they're abusive. And then on the other hand, for other things, where the hell are they?
Someone, I think I may have mentioned this the other day with Vitaly, but Jill Lavoie wrote a book called Ghetto Side, I think it is, that makes that very same argument, that there's too many cases that just don't get resolved in black communities. And so they don't bother throwing.
Waz and I talked about the difference between the Boys in Blue and the detectives.
Right.
The completely different policing infrastructure, you know. And I think it should also add, when people talk about defunding, to explain the specifics of what you mean in terms of what is going to get rolled back and eliminated and redeployed, and what is actually just broader question of democracy and public safety, which everyone's entitled to.
Right. This is also very interesting. There are supposedly, I think, up to 12 cases that the Supreme Court may or may not grant certification to, in other words, to hear in the coming the next session. But a federal appeals court yesterday was looking at the case. This is a civil case of five cops in West Virginia who were sued for shooting a black man 22 times while he lay motionless on the ground. Someone told me recently that the cops, that is a technique that they learned from the Israeli defense forces, that you just keep shooting until there is absolutely no movement. You do not hesitate. And a judge, Judge Henry Floyd, an Obama appointee, we make a practice of doing that these days because it becomes very clear on just how important the person who appoints these judges are in terms of their rulings. The Fourth Circuit wrote on behalf of a unanimous three-judge panel, we have talked in the past about this concept of qualified immunity. And last week we went into it a little bit deeper, but it essentially means that unless that as a rule, if you are a police officer or any really working on behalf of the government, that you have immunity from civil lawsuits unless a court has ruled specifically on a specific incident like this in the past. It's a legal, it's not a statutory thing. It is a legal, I guess, principle that has been developed through the courts. And they said, and they cited George Floyd in this, that to dismiss the case against these officers who shot and killed Wayne Jones, this isn't a ruling. This is just they're ruling on a motion to dismiss based upon this concept of qualified immunity, quote, would signal absolute immunity for fear-based use of deadly force, which we cannot accept. They went on to say, although we recognize that our police officers are often asked to make split-second decisions, we expect them to do so with respect for the dignity and worth of black lives. Before the ink dried on this opinion, the FBI opened investigation into yet another death of a black man at the hands of police, this time George Floyd in Minneapolis. This has to stop. Floyd, of course, not related to George Floyd, the judge, I should say. A district court judge had granted qualified immunity to the officers, finding at the time that Jones was shot that he wasn't secured, it's a legal term, by the officers, so they hadn't used excessive force under the clearly established law on the issue. This is a guy who apparently, Jones, who was killed, had been, was unhoused and was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And so under the proposals that people are talking about, both in terms of dealing with qualified immunity and in terms of rolling back funding for the police and repurposing that money into support for housing and into support for people with mental issues, you know, in three different ways, this shouldn't have happened and wouldn't have happened under these reforms, presumably. And so a really interesting case to note, because it's going to be curious to see if this is just another one that heads up to the Supreme Court. I obviously, you know, I think if you've listened to the show for a long time, know that I think the power of civil lawsuits is pretty substantial in terms of changing behavior, and particularly when there is an absence of actual government regulation and reform and oversight of these things, because then it's the last game in town, essentially. But it's good to see that we're seeing this both on like a state level. We're seeing it. Obviously, we talked about what's happening in Minneapolis. We're seeing in California. I think Garcetti said that he was going to cut significantly the budget, the police budget. De Blasio says that he's going to cut it, supposedly. I don't know exactly how much.
Yeah, I'd watch Carchetti and Garcetti and De Blasio very closely on that.
Yeah, I mean,
and Minneapolis too. I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, there's a lot of devils and a lot of details right now.
Indeed, but that's why I think it requires a lot of like ongoing pressure, but to hold to at least these broad things. My daughter just brought me some hot tea.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that was very nice of her. She apparently heard my voice is not doing very well. So here is let's go to Kevin McCarthy, who's talking about police reform. There will be, I should say, some Republicans who are going to be less than enthusiastic about police reform. Again, they see this as a potential winner for them. Or at the very least, they see this as the only possible winner for them at the moment. Here is Kevin McCarthy trying to make people understand that the type of prejudice and bigotry that's involved with the color of people's skin is not the only kind that involves color.
Absolutely. Are you confident that both sides, Republicans and Democrats, can find common ground to come up with some sort of a solution? Because this is a problem.
I know we can come to common ground. This is a problem bigger than even the Floyd family. These are things that have happened that were not on videotape. This is a moment in time that people should work together to strive to solve the problem. I will tell you, the George family, they deserve justice. And no other family should have to go through this again. To the protesters, they have a right to be heard. But to those people who were looting and the Antifa individuals, there should be consequences for those actions. This nation believes in the rule of law, that no one should be judged based upon the color of their skin, and nobody should be judged based upon the color of their uniform either. And that's what we should work together in principle to make sure at the end of the day, the thing that we've all believed is that we strive for a more perfect union, and we can do that. We are Americans. We believe in the ideas of what created our nation, and we can strive to perfect those, and this is our moment in time to do it.
Oh, my God.
Well, first off,
Jesus Christ.
One of the ideas that created our nation involved, let's be honest, a very healthy dose of genocide and racism that subjugated the people who lived here before we did.
I feel like Pauly Walnuts watching that. I'm like, does this, I forget the word, but it's like, does he get paid by the word? It's like, just wrap it up. I get it.
He also referred to them as the George family.
The George family. I caught that. And then also, yeah, the family I'm blatantly disrespecting on national television deserve justice. And then I'm going to compare cop discrimination to, I mean, yeah, Blue Lives Matter.
I look forward to a roundtable of the two BLMs meeting and sharing their stories and being heard.
I tell you what, Cop Cornel West is a great character. So we're all in the fucking Democratic experiment. Whether we're breaking heads, whether we're paralyzing some Temple University student who's a prick.
Kevin McCarthy is a longtime guy that can't talk, though. If you search Kevin McCarthy can't speak, people have clipped him on C-SPAN. So clip Kevin McCarthy can't speak 1, October 1st, 2015.
Peace without freedom is meaningless. Little side note. Do you realize what our current president, Barack Obama, has with the president before Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter? Those two presidents both won the Nobel Peace Prize. Reagan did not, but who brought people more freedom?
Yeah, mic drop, Kevin McCarthy. You know what similarity Kevin McCarthy had with the last Republican leader is that they both had difficulty speaking. It's just that John Brainard was drunk. Fun.
Exactly. Here is... Here is the New York Police Department union president, or I guess the which one of these should we play? Should we play both?
What do you think, Matt?
Let's play the first one. Let's play the first one, then we'll play the second one. Play both of them. Here he is addressing. I should just tell you that New York City is a lot more diverse than you would get the idea of with all the cops who showed up for this speech, apparently.
Now, well, I mean, not just New York City, the NYPD.
The NYPD itself is also, yes.
Significantly more diverse.
Significantly more diverse than this.
Yep.
And I will also say, based upon what we've seen over the past couple of weeks, they are much less likely to wear masks when they're out and about than in this video.
This isn't stained by someone in Minneapolis. It's still got a shine on it. And so do theirs. So do theirs. Stop treating us like animals and thugs and start treating us with some respect. That's what we're here today to say. We've been left out of the conversation. We've been vilified. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. Trying to make us embarrassed of our profession. 375 million interactions. Overwhelmingly positive. Nobody talks about all the police officers that were killed in the last week in the United States of America, and there were a number of them. We don't condone Minneapolis. We roundly reject what he did as disgusting. It's disgusting. It's not what we do. It's not what police officers do. Our legislators abandoned us. The press is vilifying us. Well, you know what, guys? I'm proud to be a cop, and I'm going to continue to be proud to be a cop until the day I retire. And that's all I have to say.
It was pretty touching stuff. Apparently, there's also no female cops in New York City.
I love that guy. That guy is that is a New York type right there.
Yes.
I mean, look. If they hadn't been absolutely beating the shit out of people, excuse my language, for the whole week, it might work a little bit better.
It might work a little bit better if there was anything remotely like
hey guys, I'm going to do an indignant, emotionally charged wine fest at the end of the week. So I say, just bear with me, how about we not commit thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of acts of brutality over this next week? So as an example, if you see a petite woman coming at you by the Barclays Center, don't throw her on the ground to give a concussion. Don't beat the hell out of delivery people, because I'm going to give this speech, Alice.
Or, alternatively, what I could do is go out there with my own billy club and smack around the podium a little bit just to say, like, look, at least I'm being consistent.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. The Timothy Burke on Twitter, Bubba Prague, did everyone the favor of basically combining the concepts that Michael just discussed, which was, you know, covering what they've been doing for the past week and a half as to why they've been so maligned and vilified and abandoned.
Everybody's trying to shame us. The legislators. The press.
Oh my God.
Everybody's trying to shame us. Embarrassed.
Oh my fucking God.
Well, you know what? This isn't stained. It's still got a shine on it. Stop treating us like animals and thugs. Start treating us with some respect.
Michael, run!
It's disgusting. trying to make us embarrassed of our profession. Don't resist! Don't resist! Don't resist! Don't resist, bro!
I'm not!
And that's all I have to say.
I mean,
they didn't even include the driving through people in Flatbush.
Right.
I mean, please. Having
the opening
complex.
The door as they're driving by people to bang them. I mean, come on. I mean, this is just like, and you know, here's the thing. In the run up to the RNC in 2004, there was a cop that we had had on for, he had written a book, actually. It was a very good book. I honestly can't recall the name now. But he was also friends with a buddy of mine who was in city government, who I had known from college. And so, you know, we got friendly with him. And prior to the RNC, we had him in. And we talked to him about, like, what his expectations were of the RNC. Some of it was on air, some of it was off air. And what they had been told in their offices about what to anticipate there was so much hyperbole that, I mean, he believed this stuff, that they get psyched up in the locker room, essentially, as if they're going out there and they are fighting like guerrilla terrorists, you know, who are armed to the teeth with rocket launchers and whatnot. Now, this was back in 2004. So we're only 3 years out from a major terrorist attack in New York City. And so, like, I think the idea that the police would be on that level of insecurity and nervousness, but that's not what was going on here. There was no, like, the idea of them being sort of so, you know, roided up and ready to sort of like strike at these, you know, bicyclists. And bro, we can't have that going. I mean, come on.
Look, they're trying to. I mean, we know, like, they tried to. I mean, I am no doubt that they build up a bunch of terrifying nonsense in their head. And, you know, there's the whole Antifa nonsense. But I also, you know, they don't. Again, it's about policing ideology. It's about, if you're out here talking about our conduct and Democrat accountability, then you should be terrorized into going home. No matter who you are or how you're doing it. Bottom line. And don't forget that they allowed just some of the looting and vandalism the precursor to assault protesters across the board. They had a strategy. Now they're in look, de Blasio backed off the curfew, and now they have to say, you know, we did maybe a couple of days of trying to spin and doing the fake kneeling. Then we tried to bully and terrorize everybody. And now we're in the third phase, which is, you know, we're not being heard and we're victims.
Right. We're the ones who are being victimized. Here is that same Mike O'Meara on with Brian Kilmeade, who Fox News, again, trying to, they're, you know, we see it in the context of Kevin McCarthy going out there saying, you know, people shouldn't be discriminated because of the color of their skin, but also the color of their uniforms. We see this with Sean Hannity going out there and saying, in many respects, Donald Trump is like George Floyd in terms of they're both victims of narrow bad cops.
Both.
They need to work this entire, everything that is going on into a frame. This is where they're always comfortable. They need to work it into a frame of aggrievement for themselves. This is what they are. This is the key to the conservative mind. It's a question of aggrievement. And here is Mike O'Meara on Fox News with his aggrievement.
So
My belief is if we want to learn from this and get better from this, and as it comes to law enforcement, there's a Republican and Democrat proposal to make some changes. So, Mike, if you want to make things better for the men and women who wear the uniform, what do you hope is in those changes? Do you want a raise in money? Do you want longer times in the academy? Do you want better equipment? Is there certain things that make your job easy?
Yes. All of the above. All of the above. You know, I say this to everybody that'll listen to me. We want to be a well-respected, well-trained, well-equipped police department, and we want to treat the public fairly, and we want to be partners in that reform. But the reform isn't just about saying that all police are bad. What my message to every single cop that's out there across this country is that you are a good person, and you do a good job. And we are not defined by someone we never met, and that's not how we act every day.
You're
and that's why
boy.
I got emotional, because I don't want to be painted with that broad brush of we are all these racist thugs. That's not who we are. And if most people that know us, and everybody out there says it, it's the best catchphrase ever. 99.9% of the cops are good and honorable people, but we have to change everything and diminish their civil rights and diminish what they do and scrutinize them more than anybody on earth is scrutinized. I mean, it just makes no sense to us. So to all the cops out there, you know, you're doing a great job.
First of all, I don't think that police have their civil rights in any way curbed. I want to make that clear to Amira. But I think on some level, part of this is if they make it about, and even if you accept the premise that 99.9% of all cops are good guys and they're all great, then it really doesn't in any way inhibit the need to reform the what police do, what their portfolio is, how much money they get. The idea that they need more money for equipment is just absurd. It's just absurd. They're well paid. I got no problem with that. I'd like to see that actually that pay that they get, which presumably does not buy them any more restraint or deal with the risks that they're taking. Let's give that pay also to teachers and social workers and other city workers across the board. But basically taking stuff off their plate. I mean, this is why I like the framing of they're overworked. They've got too much on their plate. We're asking the cops to do too much.
I mean, that's a completely true, right? I mean, they are.
I think it's true.
It's a great frame. It's also true. And,
yes.
And I've heard, you know, cops that don't have the, you know, unbelievable delusional narcissism that you just saw in that clip, which raises a whole bunch of other problems that we've been talking about. But we'll say on that narrow point that it is absolutely unfair and inappropriate and not what they want to be doing to either be specifically as a task terrorizing and over policing and harassing specific communities in a way that they're almost like, you know, the paramilitary of the real estate industry. Or on the other hand, you know, like, yeah, if somebody's having a mental health episode, I, even if have good intentions, handle it relatively speaking well, it doesn't turn into a horrifying incident, it's still not their task. I mean, I'm not going to compare.
Just because you have a gun does not mean that you're well suited for that.
Absolutely. I mean, probably quite the opposite, right? And I mean, there is a weird, I mean, look, it's of course not an exact parallel because at the end of the day, you know, the right wants to drain money from schools and, you know, Democratic leaders like Cuomo want to make, you know, charters and undermine the teachers union. But there and police departments get fed because they're the militarized side of outsourcing social problems and outsourcing not dealing with anything. But there is, in a very broad aggregate sense, there's a clear parallel there in terms of you're taking discrete professions and you're saying you're responsible for everything. You're responsible for poverty. You're responsible for no investments in, you know, public health, nutrition, all the rest of it. It's completely wrong. And there have been cops who've tried to speak out on these things, and they always point to that.
Let's, for a moment, tune into what Matt Walsh, not the funny one, not the funny ha-ha one, just the sort of funny, something's funny with this guy.
I never remember who this guy is.
He's the guy from the Daily Wire, who is highly moralistic, I think, right? And he is like his boss, who is the Pope of the Jews, Ben Shapiro. He is apparently the Pope of who's a great man and who's not a great man, or who should be in any way celebrated. But he, in doing so, in making his assessment as Pope of people's worth, misses the point entirely.
Now I ask you, have we ever seen anything like this before? Many great figures, many icons, many world renowned people, many heroes, right, have died. And there's been moments of silence for them and other symbolic gestures to honor them. Have we ever seen 8 minutes kneeling on the ground to honor anybody? And this is for George Floyd. This is, I think, the most extravagant and solemn memorial we've ever seen politicians give to anybody. And this is for George Floyd. Let me just say, George Floyd, I believe, died unjustly. And that's terrible. A lot of people die unjustly every day, and that's terrible too. His life, no more important than any of theirs.
Pause it for one second. When he says that George Floyd died unjustly, and a lot of people die unjustly, do you think that's like sort of diminishing the point that he's trying to make in the first sentence? Is it the second sentence? Is that a qualifier? Like,
I also even unjustly, it's just what? And especially coming from, I mean, I'm remembering this guy now. I mean, this guy will use, you know, hyperbole about, I don't even, you know, a book that he doesn't like being available at a public library is a threat to the foundation of civilizations. But guy being publicly murdered on the street by a squad of police officers, this is unjust.
There's no doubt in my mind. I don't think it this specifically, but this is the type of guy who would do like a 45-minute rant on how they could do Ghostbusters with women or something. You know, it's like one of those
things. Right. Type of guy.
But just to be clear on what he's talking about. Right. He is saying like that people kneeled for 8 minutes or 9 minutes as a way of paying, you know, of celebrating Floyd. I wonder if it's possible that he doesn't know that the reason why people kneeled for 9 minutes is because that's exactly what Chauvin, the cop, did to Floyd with his knee driving into his neck. As his face was smushed on the floor, on the concrete.
Very unjust.
I wonder if he understands that. It's not like, this is ostentatious. 9 minutes. Who gets on their knees for 9 minutes for a guy who's not even that great? Keep going.
Every day, and that's terrible too. His life, no more important than any of theirs. They're all important. All inherently valuable, as we discussed. But other than how he died, this was not a great man. There is no evidence that he was a great man or even a good man. So you could be upset about the injustice of it, and that's fine. That's understandable. But turning this man into a martyr and a hero and canonizing him after his death is ridiculous and outrageous and offensive. It is possible, you know, to make the case that someone died unjustly without falling to your knees in worship and adulation and acting like they were great heroes that should be remembered through the ages. It is possible. It's very possible. So we could go with that strategy.
He doesn't know why people take a knee for 9 minutes. He doesn't get it. And other than the way that how he died, this is just unbelievable to me that you could just ignore how he died. Let's put that aside and then let's assess this. Now, we wouldn't know George Floyd if he had died any other way. And the fact that how he died is representative of a massive multi-century problem that we have in this country that deals with a huge portion of our people.
Also, he's doing something really, I mean, he probably doesn't even know it, but it's so sinister because, look, the bottom line is that George Floyd could be a great guy, could be a bad guy. It's totally irrelevant. And I'm actually sure that, like most human beings, he was some combination of the latter. What has happened as a result of his murder, in addition to it galvanizing this much bigger uprising, is that people who remember him as someone that they loved, a friend, a family member, have actually been able to primarily talk about him. Unlike in countless other cases, and I'm always thinking of Giuliani, New York, where the police murder an Amadou Diallo and these people leak their juvenile records or, you know, use the media and a police PR budget and, you know, public office to demonize and besmirch them. And again, the point I'm trying to make is that in the bigger picture, honestly, it's irrelevant. It simply does not matter whether you're the greatest person or the biggest jerk in the world. You can't be murdered by a police officer. But it's also that they resent that they don't get to dictate and try to demonize and belittle the narrative. The young man that was murdered in Ferguson, I mean, they even did this to Trayvon Martin, child.
Right.
And this one does not get to be, it is being determined by his community and by family, who are, of course, remembering the many ways in which obviously he was a wonderful person. Just in the same, you know, like in his fully fleshed out humanness. They want to demonize him. That's the script.
All right. We got to take a break and head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible, folks. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you keep the show trucking. Every single show we did last week was demonetized on YouTube. I mean, understandable, but it is our members that keep our show afloat in times like these. If you have the financial resources, join themajorityreport.com. If you do not, but want the extra content, want the fun half or free half, free of commercials, send us an email, majorityreporters@gmail.com. Give us a little time. We will get there and we will hook you up. Don't forget AM Quickie. You can sign up AM Quickie and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Michael, today is Wednesday. That means that last night was Tuesday. That means that you were probably sitting exactly where you are now.
Yes.
Doing TMBS. Oh, saw the book in the background as soon as I said that.
Talking with Vivek Chibber, author of The ABCs of Capitalism and professor of sociology at New York University. That was a great conversation. We covered everything from the nature of, I mean, not a very technical sense, capitalism itself, the history of South Africa, what's happening now in the longshoremen walkouts, and the sort of non-normative reasons workers' movements are at the center of left strategy, because basically it's the only sort of mass block of countervailing power that's possible. We went into that and we covered a whole bunch of other things on the show, including talked a little bit about Olof Palme, because today supposedly they revealed who assassinated him, and you know, he was a very fascinating and important leader. We went into obviously a bunch of different conversations about policing and a variety of other things. So go to patreon.com/TMBS, get the whole thing, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. And I will tease, I guess, because it's fun that next week we're going to have Noam Chomsky on. So
that's very exciting.
Check it out.
I mentioned that yesterday.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, apparently the guy that killed Palm was supposedly killed himself in 2000.
Yeah.
And did so just because he didn't like his politics. Also, folks, check out Nomi's show. Nomiki show, both on now YouTube and on Patreon.com. She had Alex Vitale on, among others. Check out her conversation with him about the one guy whose ideas is really driving a lot of, I think, the police reform, at least that the left is talking about. Also, don't forget, you can check out the Antifada, patreon.com/theAntifada. Jamie and crew are doing live streams a lot, and they've got a lot of stuff on there, so check that out. Matt, what's happening on Literary Hangovers Twitch?
We're getting into some pirate tales, so I'll be playing Assassin's Creed Rogue while listening to James Fenimore Cooper's The Pilot soon. So twitch.tv/literary hangover.
Oh, and folks, check out our merch. We got merch now. shop.majorityreportradio.com. We're going to sell out of a couple of things already. It's been nuts. And we're sending a ton of cash to the Pacific Northwest Immigration Rights Organization. All the proceeds from the masks go there. So people have gone nuts on the masks. And we use that slogan that they have in Czechoslovakia. Your mask protects me. My mask protects you. So check it out. shop.majorityreportradio.com. Number 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
That's a good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird.
No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.